And it came to pass in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king, that wine was before him, and I took up the wine and gave it unto the king. Now I had not been before time sad in his presence. Wherefore the king said unto me, Why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. Then I was very sore afraid, and said unto the king, Let the king live for ever. Why should not my countenance be sad, when the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Then the king said unto me, For what dost thou make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said unto the king, If it please the king, and if thy servant have found favour in thy sight, that thou wouldest send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it. And the king said unto me, the queen also sitting by him, For how long shall thy journey be? And when wilt thou return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. Sometimes small happenings lead to great consequences. In God's providence, big doors can turn on small hinges. What is insignificant in itself can prove hugely important with God. And this is true of Nehemiah here, and something he does, recorded in verse 4. So I prayed to the God of heaven. The unbeliever might say, so what? And even believers might not think much of a sudden, short, silent prayer like this. However, it is true to say that this marked an historic turning point in the church. As historic, for instance, as William Tyndale's dying prayer in 1536, just before he was strangled and then burnt at the stake, Lord, open the King of England's eyes. And within 2 years, Henry VIII authorized an English Bible to be in the parish churches of England. And it was the Great Bible, largely the work of Tyndale himself. One prayer, and reformation throughout the land progressing. One prayer here, and things change for Judah and Jerusalem. It's an encouragement for us to see what kind of praying this is that Nehemiah did, and to do it more ourselves. We never know what the Lord may move us to ask for and then to grant. Because as Joseph Hart said, prayer is appointed to convey the blessings God designs to give. Long as they live, should Christians pray, they learn to pray when first they live. The message in this verse 4 hinges upon that little word, so. So I prayed to the God of heaven. Let's see first of all that it was real prayer. There are some reasons for saying this. So I prayed to the God of heaven. It followed other praying he had done earlier. In chapter 1, you remember, the opening verses of that chapter find him being visited by Hanani, one of his brethren, and certain men of Judea who had come from Jerusalem. And Nehemiah inquired about it, and they said, the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. And it came to pass, when I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned certain days, and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. The condition of Jerusalem, since the remnant had returned from their captivity, was still very dire. Work had begun on rebuilding the city, but in Zerubbabel's time, the Jews' enemies had managed to get this king, Artaxerxes, to halt the work of rebuilding the city of Jerusalem. In the previous book, Ezra chapter 4 and verse 21, through the cunning of these enemies, he issues this decree: give ye now commandment to cause these men to cease, and that this city be not builded until another commandment shall be given from me. And so the city languishes, and Nehemiah is distraught that the walls are still broken, the gates burned, and it looks a pitiful, dreadful sight. So he prayed, chapter 1, verse 4, before the God of heaven, on his own. And there is a place for this kind of praying, on his own before God. In his closet, as our Lord teaches in Matthew chapter 6, enter into thy closet and pray to thy Father in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. This was his resort in a distressing time. Is it your resort as well, and my resort, instinctively to sometimes even weep our way into God's presence because of the crushing thing that is upon us all of a sudden? But he makes a definite request, you see, in chapter 1 and verse 11, in this private prayer of his on his own. O Lord, I beseech thee, let now thine ear be attentive to the prayer of thy servant, and to the prayer of thy servants who desire to fear thy name. And prosper, I pray thee, thy servant this day, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was the king's cup bearer. And what follows in chapter 2 shows that Nehemiah was prayerfully waiting for an opportunity to ask Artaxerxes something. He's asked that he might have favor in his sight, or mercy in the sight. And notice, in the sight of this man. It might seem an unlikely thing that the king was going to issue another decree, reversing the policy of the first one and allowing Jerusalem to be rebuilt. But he was only this man. And look at verse 5. Who is the one to whom Nehemiah has been praying? I beseech thee, O Lord God of heaven, the great and terrible God that keepeth covenant and mercy for them that love him and observe his commandments. That shrinks the great king down to size. That shrinks the seemingly impossible problem down to size. When you have a great God, everything else takes its proper proportions, and we're encouraged to pray and ask great things of God. What Nehemiah is prayerfully awaiting the opportunity to ask is for a leave of absence from his job and a commission to go to Jerusalem and rebuild its walls as the governor. He had to wait for an opportune time, which we'll see comes in chapter 2. But in passing, dear friends, how wonderful it is that we don't need to wait for a favorable, opportune time to pray to the King of Kings and Lord of lords. Hebrews 4 verse 16 says, let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace any time, and the Lord waits to be gracious. There's no having to look for a favorable opportunity. God is waiting for us to pray and is always ready to listen. Well, the unlikelihood that the king would accede to this request is pretty great, and it's a great step of faith on Nehemiah's part to wait for the opportunity and ask when the time seems right. But there is something that encouraged him. You might say a token. And sometimes you see when we're praying and asking a great thing that seems humanly unlikely that God would grant it, he does give us tokens and encouragements. And what was it in this case? Well, if you notice the exact words of the original prohibition, Ezra 4 verse 21, give ye now commandment to cause these men to cease, and that this city be not builded until another commandment shall be given from me. So there's the possibility that the king might issue another decree, a different decree, authorizing the rebuilding of the city of Jerusalem. It's perfectly possible. And so Nehemiah, seizing on this and praying for favor, waits his time. It's real prayer. This prayer that we're thinking about, so I prayed to the God of heaven, it was preceded by preparation, praying on his own before God and awaiting the favorable opportunity. So that's the first thing. The second is this: not only real prayer, but quick prayer. Now back into chapter 2 verse 4. So I prayed to the God of heaven. At this time it's about 4 months later, and Nehemiah has been waiting, and the situation weighs on him very greatly. And you know that when you bear a burden of great sorrow, it shows on your face. And it showed on Nehemiah's face, so much so that the king, verse 2, says, why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. And apparently one of the laws and the customs was that a man as important as a king's cupbearer should never appear sorrowful in the presence of the king. But Nehemiah had, whether it was deliberate to hope that the king might ask why, or whether it was that he just couldn't help being like that, we're not sure. But the king wants to know, why is thy countenance sad? And straight away the favorable opportunity comes, and Nehemiah is able to tell him and then pray to the God of heaven about it. And you'll notice in passing that Nehemiah's answer, verse 3, he doesn't say to the king, oh, there's nothing the matter, I'm very sorry, your majesty, I shouldn't have been looking like that, I'm really happy after all. He says, let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad when the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, and you see, the sepulchres of your relatives was a very sacred thing and mattered greatly to people of that time. And the place of those sepulchres, the city of Jerusalem, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire. And there's a very compelling explanation now, which is likely to move the king. But notice Nehemiah is honest. And when he's asked why he's sad, he doesn't say, I'm fine, he honestly tells the king why. And perhaps that's a word to us, because too often we're not honest with each other, are we? Like we ought to be. And if we are burdened or troubled, something is the matter, and it shows, as it's likely to do, and someone among our Christian friends asks how we are, it's not helpful to say, "Oh, I'm fine, all right, fine." Because we're not being honest. It might be because that we don't want to say what the matter is, but if it is a sincere inquiry, well meant, and not just a superficial, "Well, all right then," kind of thing, if it is a sincere inquiry, we should sincerely share what is the matter, like Nehemiah does here. It's a test of the quality of our Christian fellowship, isn't it? That we don't feel the need to give the impression that all is well with us when it is not, and that we should be able to unburden ourselves with things that are the matter, and who knows what will come of it as a result. And he uses means with the prayer, because "so I pray to the God of heaven," that comes next, but first of all he explains the situation to the king. And to go to someone in a position of being able to help us, joined with praying about the thing, can be perfectly right. It's not necessarily that spiritual to say, "I've prayed about it to the Lord, I'm not going to mention it to anybody else. Oh, only for the Lord's ears, and the Lord will come in for me. I'm not going to say it." It could be, you see, that sharing it with someone else is really the means the Lord will use. Like in this case, he told the king, and you know what followed. But it was coupled with prayer. And so prayer and the use of means, praying about it to the Lord first, as Nehemiah did in chapter 1, and then mentioning it to some key person as we're led, especially if they ask about it, it could be that it'll set in motion things that will help us. We should never be so spiritual that we ignore proper means that God might well choose to use. Anyhow, when he said, verse 4, "For what dost thou make request?" There it was. What he'd been waiting for. That was the cue. That was the chance, the opportunity now to request the king for what had been on Nehemiah's mind and heart. And now comes the quick prayer. Verse 4. "So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said unto the king, if it please the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, send me unto Judah." See how quick it was. One instant, praying to the God of heaven. The next instant, making his request of the king. And in that tiny space of time, there was quick and yet real prayer to the God of heaven. It was, as we call it, a telegraph prayer. Darting a request up to God, mentally, silently, and yet effectually in that choice moment. And what do you think Nehemiah prayed about to the God of heaven in that very short space? And what is it that we might do in a similar situation? Well, don't you think he would have, as part of that instant prayer, thanked God for disposing the king's heart favorably? As Proverbs 21 says, "The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. He turneth it whithersoever he will." As that prayer went up silently to God, there was that thanksgiving that God had worked and inclined and disposed the king. Not in so many words as I'm saying, of course, but he would have framed it in his thoughts like that quickly. And then secondly, he prayed for wisdom. Wisdom to know what to ask for or how to frame his request in the best possible way. If any man lack wisdom, let him ask of God. And thirdly, he prayed that the prayer might be answered and that God would grant him the request, send me unto Judah. And we know, of course, that the king, after more inquiry, granted him his request. And so that brief, quick prayer was the turning point that changed everything. Now Judah and Jerusalem will have a governor. Now there'll be one who will lead the rebuilding of the wall. There'll be this decree that will come from Artaxerxes, replacing the first one, authorizing the building of the walls, and so on. So what I'm coming to is this. It teaches us this important aspect of praying. So I prayed to the God of heaven in an instant. Although there's a place for the kind of praying he did in chapter 1, which is in secret, drawn out. And there's a place for the kind of praying in chapter 4 and verse 9, when there was a prayer meeting, Nehemiah and the builders. We made our prayer unto God and set a watch against them day and night because of the enemies. So secret prayer, corporate prayer, but in this case, instant prayer when you're still standing in that given moment. And it's this kind of praying that can be done habitually, can't it? It can go on all the time. It can go on any time. And when we're, say, put on the spot and ask something, Lord, what do I say? Instantly in the mind, and then will come the help. Or perhaps we're asked to do something, and as we proceed to do it, Lord, grant me help, wisdom, guidance, enabling. Instantly in the mind, you see. Instant praying to the God of heaven. Some bad news. Oh Lord, grant me comfort, grant me peace. Or maybe some bad news that someone else has heard. Lord, help them, strengthen them, come in for them. Instantly, like that. While you're standing, while you're doing something, while you're thinking about something else. It's prayer. Or good news. Oh Lord, I thank thee for this great blessing. Straight away like that. Or when we hear of someone's need, don't wait until you get alone with God to commend them to God. The need is more urgent than that. Do it straight away. Pray to the God of heaven from your mind, silently, right there and then. Or maybe you're impressed with the Lord's goodness in some way. You don't have to drop down on your knees at some opportune time to thank the Lord and tell him you love him. Straight away. Pray to the God of heaven right there and then. That's what Paul in 1 Thessalonians 5 verse 17 says. Pray without ceasing. You see, this kind of praying needn't cease. It can go on and on, not be suspended for very long. You can't pray in your closet without ceasing. You've got to come out and do everything else. You can't pray corporately in a prayer meeting without ceasing. We've got to go home and sleep at night and proceed into the next day. But wherever we are at all times, you can do this without ceasing. Now you might think that on and off prayer like this, telegraph praying, that it is inferior to sustained longer times on your knees alone with God, or together corporately as a church praying at the prayer meeting. It might be inferior. It's not inferior. The word prayed in verse 4. So I prayed to the God of heaven. That's the word in the original used for every kind of praying. It's real prayer, though it's quick prayer. And notice, I prayed to the God of heaven. He hears it. It's just as real as any other kind of praying. And that's encouraging, isn't it? Very encouraging. Someone has said, call in the divine help. if it be but by darting out our desires to God. Augustine said, "He that carrieth his own temple about with him may go to prayer when he pleaseth." And that poem by Alfred Lord Tennyson in Memoriam mentions Mary, and this line, "Her eyes are homes of silent prayer." Think about that. You look into her eyes, they're homes of silent prayer. They're the eyes that show that she has known what it is to pray silently, instantly, frequently to the God of heaven. Something about those eyes. "In thy weakness, in thy peril, raise to heaven a trustful call. Strength and calm for every crisis, come in telling Jesus all." We can be prayers on legs and be praying at any time, in any situation, praying to the God of heaven. It becomes habitual, and it is a most blessed and sanctified habit. Quick prayer. And then let's conclude by saying that it was blessed prayer. "So I prayed to the God of heaven." Link that with the second part of verse 6. "So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time," and so on. You see the two so's? So he prayed, so the Lord answered, by the king agreeing to his request for leave and a commission to rebuild Jerusalem. Now, the king was not aware of Nehemiah's prayer. It was not long enough for the king to notice that Nehemiah was doing it. But as Spurgeon said, it was long enough for God to hear it. And just a thought, the directing of the Spirit, the heart lifted up almost without any expression, not articulating anything. God can read what we mean in praying. You see, if we're in a situation where we can't be at our bedside kneeling, praying, or in our room praying, in our closet, if we're not in a situation where we're in a prayer meeting in a favoured place full of potential in the church, one and another taking part in prayer, the danger is we think, well, I can't pray then. What if I'm laid up in a hospital bed and I'm so unwell and I can hardly even assemble my thoughts? What if I've got to be in bed for a long time at home and I'm so weak and weary? What's to become of my prayer life? Ah, you can send up those darting prayers, those telegraph prayers, those ejaculatory prayers, as they're sometimes called, any time, and the Lord hears, and you pray to the God of heaven. If that's all you can do, that's so much to God, and he accepts it. And that's a great comfort, isn't it? Because when we're very weak, when we're distracted, when we're feeling wretched, and praying is often the last thing that we feel like doing or feel able to do. But you see, Nehemiah was on the spot and he only had an instant. His was not a very conducive place for praying, was it? Artaxerxes' court wasn't exactly a holy place, a spiritual place, a godly place. And yet he prayed in that instant. And it's written down here as real prayer, though quick prayer, and blessed prayer. I prayed to the God of heaven. And it became a turning point, and it led to great things. The Lord is always with us, dear friends. As we find in 1 Peter 3 verse 12, the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, his ears are open unto their prayers. Remember this, wherever you are, the Lord will hear you when you lift your heart to him. And who knows what might come of it? It's not only hours wrestling in prayer with God alone that achieve things. It's not only great prayer meetings in the church, one after another beseeching God and banging on heaven's door. It's not only those times that achieve great things. It can be one individual moved to ask a certain thing, and it sets in motion a chain of events, like in the case of this man Nehemiah. Who knows what might come of it? Because we're fitting in to God's sovereign and glorious purposes. One divinely led and spontaneous prayer, and who knows? This world owes more to prayer than it dreams of. So does the church. And let's be encouraged, dear friends, to pray more like Nehemiah here. Pray when you're on your way home tonight. You can pray when you're driving like this. You can pray while you're walking around. You can pray when you're sitting down. You can pray wherever you are. You can pray in bed. You can pray first thing as you open your eyes in the morning. Pray to the God of heaven last thing at night. You can pray any situation, not only the ones that drive you to it, but whether you're feeling comfortable and happy and encouraged and blessed, or feeling quite neutral about things, pray to the God of heaven. Be like Nehemiah. Pray prayer on legs wherever we go, wherever we are. And who knows what God in his great inscrutable purposes may prove that this kind of praying is so very blessed. If we are only those who pray first thing in the morning, last thing at night, when we're at prayer meetings, there's a whole swathe of life, an opportunity that's missed for prayer. Especially, of course, when we feel we have sinned, when we fear we have sinned. Don't let a moment go by without confessing it to the Lord. Keep short accounts. Go from one confession to another to keep things right. As well as thanksgiving, as well as requests, as well as saying you love him, as well as worship, as well as crying to him in dependence and so on. May it be that each one of us always can have this said of us: so I prayed to the God of heaven, and so the Lord blessed. May the Lord make it so, for his name's sake. Amen.